This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Actually, I did have I had kind of a fun idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it's like a drink, okay? And you take six shots, and in every single shot glass, you line them up, and you put food coloring in each one, right? So drop a red, drop a green, drop a yellow, drop a purple, drop an orange, drop a blue, in each one.
Okay.
Right? And then you pour, like, let's say like vodka or something like that, something clear, maybe some clear rum, and you mix it all together in like a golden glass, and you call it the Infinity Pour.
I'm done. I'm going away now.
Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo,
and I'm Bell.
Bell, Ben, are you feeling so good?
I don't feel so Bell.
No. Okay. Spoilers. 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 Before we do anything, spoilers.
Yes. Spoilers.
Okay. All right. So that's out of the way. Yes. Of course, you are listening to the most unnecessary show on the internet. It's Bo. It's Bell. We talk about comic books. Talk about movies. Talk about comic book movies. And a lot of other stuff
as well. And spoilers.
Yes, definitely spoilers this time. Okay, so, Bell, Infinity War, it has happened. We are super late to the game, but ideally by this point, everybody has seen it. This was one of those movies. I mean, it is the most ambitious crossover in cinema history. I don't think that's an understatement at all. It's not just marketing jargon. It is true. And it is, I have seen this stated before, so I'm just regurgitating what I have seen. And I think this is also true. It is this generation's Empire Strike Back. It is this generation's Luke, I Am Your Father. There is a ending to this movie that is so catastrophic and so spoiler heavy that it is impossible to talk about if you have not seen this movie without absolutely ruining it for you.
Yes, that is very true.
Going into this movie, Bell, Thanos, the Mad Titan, he has been behind the scenes for quite some time, ever since the original Avengers. We've been looking forward to this. Just out of the gate, what'd you think?
I was very impressed. It was one of those things where I was kind of worried about how they're going to fit 40 characters into a movie and make it work. But the way they divided the subplots, they kept them real short. And so it was like, you know, each subplot had like, you know, 3 points to it, right? So it's like, you know, you got your A, B, and your C, and then everybody came back down and met up in Wakanda. And so you didn't get lost as you jumped from subplot to subplot and from character to character. And I thought it was really well done. Very good. There are things I'll talk about later, but like, you know, I thought the ending was great. I didn't see the snap happening. Thought it might have happened in the next one, and that's how they kind of like, you know, changed the world for the next you know, wave of Avengers film or whatever. But yeah, man, I thought it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, blew all my expectations out of the water. I had so many theories going in. Almost every single one of them was wrong. The only thing that I think I got right was that Loki was going to die in the first few minutes, which of course did happen. But yeah, look, so they chose a very ambitious route here. They chose a very, I think, wise route of making this movie all about Thanos. It's really, when it comes down to it, this is the tale of two individuals more so than anything else. It's Tony and it's Thanos. And it's really Thanos first and Tony second.
I would argue that it's just like this is Thanos's movie, right? Like, you know, we got an Iron Man, we got a Doctor Strange movie, we got a Black Panther movie. This is the Thanos movie.
It's true, except for that Iron Man actually got development apart from Thanos. Like, we get to see him with Pepper Potts, and we get to see him kind of, you know, with his relationship with Peter and that sort of thing. So those are not necessarily tied directly into Thanos. And so from that standpoint, that's where I kind of see him as kind of like a secondary character to what is really Thanos's film.
Sure. And I, you know, Tony's a very important part of the MCU, and this being the, you know, closing act or second to last act to the, you know, the first phase of Marvel, like the Uber phase, I guess you could say, then yeah, clearly he would take a pretty important role there, I would say.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is the Marvel cataclysm. Like, everything has changed at the end of this movie. And yes, you know, we'll get into theories and how, you know, it may or may not be, you know, like that for forever and always, but it certainly has ramifications that are going to play into the next film and really set up what will be the future of Marvel. Kevin Feige has been working behind the scenes. Now, y'all know, longtime listeners of Panel to Screen know, we got Kevin Feige on speed dial. He hasn't been answering our calls lately. That's fine. He's got a lot going on, but we know that, you know, he's been playing the long ball game here. And, you know, you mentioned it already, Belle, but with all of these different characters getting like their little arcs and feeling so very satisfied to the extent that this movie needed their arcs to be satisfied, I was just utterly impressed. Other than Thanos, because we're going to talk about the Mad Titan quite a bit. But other than Thanos, which characters did you enjoy the most?
So as far as characters go, I guess you could say it was the interactions between characters. But because I liked Thor's interaction with Rocket and with the Guardians in general, especially with Peter Quill. Like, I thought that was kind of and Groot, you know. So I would say Thor was definitely one of those, because his interactions with the Guardians were great. I really liked Thanos. I thought he was a very compelling villain. I thought they did a great job with him. And I think, you know, it's probably one of the better villains that the Marvel Universe has ever come up with. Maybe even better than Loki. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I would say actually like leagues better than Loki. In fact, if you look at the last phase of Marvel films and what they've done with, you know, villains like Ego, Killmonger, now Thanos, like the quote unquote villain problem that Marvel has had, I don't think it's fair to put that at their feet anymore. They've got some insanely compelling, like really, really satisfying villains.
Yeah, yeah. And Thanos is just the tip of that iceberg. And I think he's one of the most interesting villains they've had. I mean, it's kind of, Black Panther just came out, and Killmonger was also a similar kind of idea.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's not to steal any of Black Panther's thunder, but I do think that the kind of villain, I suppose, that both Killmonger and Thanos are, I think Thanos kind of like did it a little bit better.
Well, he's playing with the whole universe. The benefit of Killmonger is that his, you know, the quote unquote good ideas that he has, you know, the kind of the points that he makes are a little bit more like realistic in the terms that we can feel those in kind of our life and society and culture today. Whereas Thanos, it's not that's not also true of some of the things that he's kind of promoting. But his is so cosmic and so out there and so grand that it makes it more kind of fantastic as opposed to a physical, let's say, of Killmonger's approach. But yeah, man, Thanos, they made this dude relatable. I don't know about you, man, but I actually was able to get into his shoes to actually feel the emotions that he was feeling, even though he's a tyrant and a madman and, you know, obviously a sociopath, a psychopath, and a murderer on a planetary scale, or I'm sorry, a universal scale. When he's talking to Gamora, this child that he kidnapped, that he tortured, that he abused, like when he's talking to her, you get in this weird, twisted way that he does actually care for her. They were able to sell that in a way that I didn't think they were going to be able to.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, yeah, what is the line that she says? He's like, you know, you did all this stuff to me and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, now you're the most, you know, now you're the baddest woman in the universe, basically. Like essentially, he was doing those things to protect her because he cared about her, because he didn't want anything bad to happen to her. So he gave her the skills and whatnot that she needed to be the best, despite them being horrible things that he did to her to gain that, right? Like, because his in his mind, like, those are the things. He's like, yeah, so what? It's the ends justify the means is basically his whole mantra. And yeah, you see that with Gamora as well.
Dude, Gamora, her entire arc that we've seen, and this goes through all the characters across this film and across this universe. Like, this movie was really kind of the perfect culmination of who she has been and the journey that she's been going on in terms of trying to defining what family is, who her family is, how she has been brought up, who her family has been, and ultimately what she becomes to her, you know, I guess, first adopted family, let's say. You know, in Guardians 2, when she's talking to Nebula, and Nebula is, they're talking about being brought up by Thanos and how abusive he was, and the tension that existed between them, because, you know, while they fought and while Gamora stood by, Nebula was being tortured and abused and like torn apart and everything else. And Nebula was resentful because her sister never stood up for her. You know, like you were the strong one. You were the best. You were his favorite. You had the pull and you never went to bat for me. And so to see that whole bond, that whole journey they went on in Guardians 2 pay off in this movie in this kind of twisted way where she is being literally ripped apart. Nebula is literally being ripped apart. And to have Gamora step up and say, like, no, stop this. It's like the answer to the question that was put forth in Guardians 2. And it was so brilliantly done, man. Like, I loved Gamora's arc.
Yeah. Well, what was it? It's like, you know, Nebula was saying, you wanted to win. I wanted a sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that cut deep. And you could tell because she was like, you know, asking Peter to kill her to protect that secret. But she sees her sister in dire straits and she's like, all right, whatever. Granted, I mean, Thanos knew. So it's, yeah, so it's kind of, you know, she didn't know how much leverage he actually had on her. And so, yeah, that was, but still, though, yeah, the circle is now complete. You know, they are now truly sisters as opposed to rivals and whatnot.
Absolutely. Look, there were so many like standout, really like ultra cool moments throughout that just peppered throughout this movie. You got, of course, the forging of Stormbreaker and kind of the combination of this Stormbreaker of the comics and, of course, the Ultimates version of Mjolnir, or at least the first iteration of that hammer in the Ultimates universe. You had the you know, even just like the dwarven forge that was referenced in the first Thor movie, and to bring in Peter Dinklage as a giant dwarf, brilliant casting. Yeah,
that was hilarious.
Tyrion
I did not see that coming at all.
Dude, speaking of, all right, so this is the thing, man. Speaking of things I didn't see coming at all, bringing it back to Red Skull, going back to the original Captain America, and actually bringing Red Skull back in as kind of the guardian of the Soul Stone. Did you know that was coming?
Had no idea. Was really sad to find out that it wasn't Hugo Weaving, though, but had no idea Red Skull was going to show up in here. I'd always wondered what happened to him and whether or not he would make another appearance after getting, you know, teleported away by the Tesseract. And I wonder if they just let that open on purpose, or if that was like, if they had planned it so long ago that, you know, he was going to be the keeper of the Soul Stone.
I can't imagine. I would think that they were just kind of like putting him on, you know, putting him on ice, so to speak, until they could figure out where they wanted to go. I didn't realize it was not Hugo Weaving until I found that out after the movie. Like, the guy that they got to play it was actually so good that I had no clue. And I got to tell you, I'm not heartbroken by that at all. To me, it just makes it easier that, you know, the right actor can really kind of put on that character and come back. Like, let's say, could you imagine if they pull that character after, you know, the next Avengers, pull him back to Earth and make him like a villain on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Do you know how quickly I would come back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't think you could do that with Red Skull and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think, I don't know.
Really? Because, I mean, like, he's the head of HYDRA.
Is Hydra still around on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I hadn't kept up with it in a long time.
I tell you what, if freaking Red Skull came back to Earth from space, Hydra would be coming back real quick. he would assemble a Hydra real fast. Plus bring in like cosmic knowledge and everything else. And, you know, with the last time I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a couple of seasons ago. But as I recall, they were tying Hydra's origins or aspects of Hydra's origins into cosmic level stuff. I actually thought about that specifically with, you know, the reveal that Red Skull's in space. But anyway, so Red Skull popping up, big thing. Stormbreaker being forged, huge thing. The moment where Bucky picks up Rocket Raccoon and like spins around, does the whole spin move. Awesome. You know, that interchange too about how much for the arm, I'm going to get that arm. Like, so perfect. So perfect.
Yeah. Well, the scene on Nowhere, like, that was really well done too.
Oh, yeah, man. Like, okay. So that's the thing. They made Thanos very killable, which I think was a brilliant decision. They made him powerful, but very killable. Because we saw
killed in this fake, you know, in the fake Nowhere.
And you believed it. Like, that's the thing that you felt it. You're like, oh, okay, they can kill this guy. He's not invincible. And like, that was one of three moments in the movie where it kind of communicated to you that, yeah, like this is a villain that is not so unstoppable that he cannot be like ended. Like, this is such a, this path that he is on. There are so many moments that should end it, but then don't. And of course, now we know with the reveal from Doctor Strange, you know, there's only one reality. There's only one timeline in which they're actually successful. Hopefully, yeah, that is the timeline that we're on. Doctor Strange, man, in many respects, this was his movie in a big way. Anybody that was carrying an Infinity Stone or was in the vicinity of one, this was really their movie as well. We got to see Doctor Strange like performing on a level that I don't think we've ever seen before. Like, his power level in this, huge.
I actually went back and watched Doctor Strange after seeing this movie, just because I like Doctor Strange, and I just, you know, was like, man, I want to rewatch his origin story again. And he got a lot of screen time and a lot of cool stuff. And I was really glad to see more of him, because I just kind of forgot how much I liked that Doctor Strange movie.
Well, you know, Strange is actually he's a fascinating character, and he's one that plays well against everyone else. Kind of in a similar fashion as T'Challa, because like Strange and Black Panther, they're not Avengers. They're not trying to be Avengers. They don't need the Avengers. And kind of what they do is outside of that realm. Like, if they're all teaming up, it's out of, what was it that Tony said? Professional courtesy. Like, that's their relation. They've got, you know, Doctor Strange protects the universe and reality. You know, T'Challa's the king of Wakanda. They're not necessarily superheroes beyond what they do for the realms in which they oversee. And so, like, having somebody like a Doctor Strange in the same room with Tony Stark, and kind of this idea of like Tony's trying to boss him around and Strange isn't even having it, was perfect. Like, that was the perfect way to communicate that dynamic there.
Yeah. I was really sad, though, that we didn't see a, you know, cool facial hair bros high five, though.
I thought about that, too. Like, it's like, oh, nice goatee. Oh, nice goatee. You know, nothing like that.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because Vision also had a lot to do in this film as well. And it was really interesting, though, the parallels between the good guys, quote, and the bad guys. And how different approaches to doing things, right? Because, you know, Thanos is all about sacrifice, and like, you need sacrifice in order to achieve goals. Whereas the Avengers are like, we don't trade lives. We're not going to kill you, Vision. There's got to be another way. There's always got to be another way. And it ends up, you know, ultimately being their downfall, which I thought that was really neat too. I really kind of enjoyed what they were doing with Vision and how he was kind of like, nah, I'm cool with sacrificing myself. It means this guy can't kill half the universe, you know?
Right.
Yeah, they did some neat stuff with him as well.
And, you know, to have Wanda be the one, you know, I caught more about this in the second time I watched the movie, but Wanda, her powers, you know, the Vision says about the stone that it could possibly be destroyed by a power source that is very similar to its own. And if you think about what Wanda, what the Scarlet Witch's power set is from the comics, she has this control over reality. She can literally rewrite reality. And of course, her power, the way that it manifests, is in this kind of red energy, kind of misty, dustiness that's very reminiscent of the Power Stone itself. I'm sorry, the Reality Gem itself.
Yeah, but I mean, she got her powers from the Mind Stone, though, which I figured it might be yellow, right? But I think the only reason why it was red was because Scarlet Witch is red.
That's interesting. So, all right, so fair point. I'd forgotten that that was the case. They mentioned that in Age of Ultron, that they were working on the Infinity Stone in order to enhance other folks. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, there's something there. Like, she's tapping into a similar source of the Reality Stone. Because, again, her power is power over reality. The Reality Stone is red. Her powers are red. I don't know. There just seems like there's something there.
Well, I would say it's power more of her mind, right? Because she uses the mind control thing in Age of Ultron.
But she floats and levitates and sends out blasts and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's more than more than mind.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, the powers came from the Mind Stone, and so the Mind Stone clearly has a lot of power, right? Right. It can do a lot of things.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. Like, how familiar are you with her comic book interpretation?
I mean, I know a little bit about what the House of M stuff and
exactly.
How she's like
exactly, exactly. Kind of she can speak reality into existence or out of existence. Like that is like quintessential to who she is.
But I thought she was like a powerful psychic.
I mean, they've always been somewhat nebulous about that. Like, it's all right. So if I'm remembering correctly, it's a combination of two things. It's one, she's got kind of these mental psychic abilities that are, mutant in origin, but she also has these magic abilities that are, trained Doctor Strange-esque. And so I think it's like a combination of the two is what gives her the control over reality. So, I don't know. I just thought there might be something there. I'm still going to stand by it just because I think it's cool. And who knows, maybe at some point when X-Men finally come into the world or mutants finally come into the world, perhaps it will be as a result of Wanda telling the world, no more mutants or more mutants or now there's mutants or whatever it may be.
She just goes mutants. And that's like the end credit scene is like Scarlet Witch just, getting up going mutants. And then they play the 90s X-Men cartoon theme.
I could see it, man. Like, have you seen the mock-up that somebody created of all the various potential new Marvel phase films?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so somebody created this graphic that is it's a nod to the original phase release of kind of that big black screen with all of the, Captain America Civil War and Thor Ragnarok when they first revealed that at D23.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did is they had one that was like Doctor Strange Illuminati, and they had one that was Thunderbolts, but the O was actually Deadpool's face. And so it was all of these very really like exciting titles. And of course, it was completely fake, but it did make me think about when Marvel is ready to announce the next phase, the next suite of films, which will likely be after the next Infinity War. What is it like? What big titles do they have that are going to get people excited? You've got Secret Wars or Secret Invasion; those are two pretty big ones. But then, if you actually have the X-Men coming in, doing like House of M as kind of an X-Men Avengers like first crossover or that leads to an X-Men versus Avengers or something like that, that could be fantastic, man. And I say fantastic intentionally because, of course, with Fantastic Four, perhaps they'll be ready at that point to announce, that Fantastic Four will get their own homecoming, so to speak.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, that merger is kind of frightening, but...
Yeah. Let's not focus
I don't like one company owning like, 40% of the entire media, output of a nation. I think that's just kind of weird to begin with. But, that aside, if anybody's going to do justice to those, franchises that Fox owned, it will be Disney, because, Disney's all about making their money back like they did with Star Wars. And so they're gonna keep making those movies because they're gonna keep making money until they stop making money, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think it would be cool to see kind of like, I don't know if it's their, because what do they call this arc? I know, because we have multiple phases, right?
Yeah, phase and one, then, phase two, and phase three. So this is the end of like the 10-year culmination of those first three phases.
Yeah, did they give a name to that? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Called
the Saga, the first Saga, right?
Ooh, and I like that.
Yeah, and so like the first Avengers Saga is going to end with Avengers 4. And then who knows, maybe they'll start doing some like X-Men stuff like you said, and then doing the end phase of, or the end saga for the next one would be, you know, Avengers versus X-Men. That could be neat.
I think that would be cool. You know, and I could easily see House of M playing at some point. Yeah, what's up?
No. The end, what they should do though, the final Marvel movie that they make should be Deadpool kills the Marvel universe. It's just Deadpool killing everyone.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. I would love to see that.
And then like Deadpool kills the X-Men, Deadpool kills the DC universe, and then we're just done with comic book movies at that point.
And then it's over.
All done.
Deadpool killed it.
Yeah, a trilogy. Deadpool kills the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Deadpool kills the DC Cinematic Universe, and then Deadpool kills all superhero property characters.
Yeah, no, I
then it's just done.
I think it makes sense.
Oh, I think that'd be a beautiful way to do it.
Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. Man, we got some great standout moments. We got a girl power scene, too, with the team up of Scarlet Witch, Black Widow, and Okoye. You know, let's fund that crossover. That needs to happen. Assuming that, you know, that Scarlet Witch is not gone. And we'll talk about that in a minute. The Battle of Wakanda overall, you know, like I mentioned, we've already got the, you know, the Rocket and
Bucky.
Yeah. We got that team up. We got, the girl power team up. We also got, you know, the Hulk, Banner having performance issues, embarrassing, Tony earlier in front of the Wizards. What do you think's going on with Banner, man? Where's Hulk? Where's puny Hulk?
Hulk got his butt kicked by Thanos in the first 5 minutes of this movie, like handily. Because that's the thing, is like when you're incredibly strong like that, you don't really need style. But like Thanos is incredibly strong. Maybe not Hulk strong, but like he knows how to fight. And so when he's fighting this big old berserker dude that he's, you know, pretty close to the same strength of, he just tore him up. And so Hulk's like, nah, I ain't coming out of there. And I wonder though if you know, when the whole snap thing happened, if Thanos or if the Hulk can be dusted, you know, like I was wondering that afterwards. Huh. We see Banner, you know, he's basically only the original Avengers survived. Well,
right.
Like you said, we'll talk about that later. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if the Hulk was like, my theory is just, he was scared because he got the crap beat out of by Thanos. And he's like, I'm not going back out there to get my butt kicked again. I'm used to being the baddest that there is. And I wasn't at this point. And but yeah, I don't know, like now I'm kind of curious though as to what happened after the snap to old Hulky boy. So we'll have to figure that out.
So you think it's possible that Hulk could be separated from Banner by the snap?
I mean, I'm wondering, because I mean Banner treats them as if they're two separate entities. It's like him and the Hulk.
They've certainly become that. I mean, you even said yourself, I think when we did our Ragnarok review, that, you know, they are very much going that route where they may not have started that way, but they've evolved, especially with the events of Ragnarok, into becoming two separate entities. And so I see that. And I liked the way they kind of showed that too, with kind of the half face and then the Hulk kind of popping really quickly inside the
no
like, what does that mean? That was that was hilarious. You know, the Black Order, actually, the way they kind of each had their own way of being various members of the Avengers, like Onyx, the big dude with the axe hammer thing.
Dark Star, Dwarf Star, I think.
Yeah, so he's like an amalgam of Hulk and Thor, which is really interesting, especially since Thor never actually got a chance to fight him. And then, of course, the Squidworth dude, which was...
That would be the Ebon Maw.
Oh, my gosh. Ebon Maw was well done.
He was great.
Oh, he was perfect.
Very well done.
The other ones were kind of, you know, blink and you miss them. But those two in particular stood out, Ebon Maw especially. And, you know, Thanos' children, they kind of got destroyed pretty quick. I feel like a lot of the marketing buildup for who those characters were was not necessarily wasted per se, because you needed to have some significant generals hit the floor, especially if by the end of it, Thanos is going to be staring off into the sunset. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think of the Black Order?
Like you said, I really liked Ebon Maw. But I thought the other ones didn't really have any sort of true development. And, you know, the movie is 2 hours and 40 minutes long. So I didn't. And honestly, those are ancillary characters that aren't too terribly important. I would rather them focus on Thanos and develop his character than to spend time trying to get us to care about characters that are ultimately going to die. And so, yeah, like, cause I mean, obviously the Avengers are going to defeat those guys. I mean, come on, it's just going to happen. And that's what did happen. And I was kind of surprised at the efficiency at which they took them out. Eben Maul, for example, I thought when he, like, you know, got sucked out in space, something was going to happen, but you see his face frost over and it's like, nope, that dude's dead. I did not see that coming like that. Like, I thought they might be in the final, like, they would all die in the final climactic battle, which is what happens to the rest of them. But Dwarf Star, would have liked to have seen him fight the Hulk, but, you know, whatever. Corvus Glaive, really interesting. His glaive made it so that he couldn't, like, vision couldn't phase. I would have liked to have seen some explanation for that. Like, is the glaive powered by the Mind Stone as well? Like, something like, I don't know. And then, you know, Proxima Midnight is just, you know, she's just a fighter chick and she got splooshed all over all over Black Widow. But, you know, all in all, you could see that they're, you know, Corvus and Proxima, there's some sort of relationship there. It wasn't really fleshed out, but, you know, whatever. They were fun. They had some cool fight scenes. And really, Eben Maul was the only one I sort of cared about because he seems to be like the mouth of Thanos, like the herald, if you will, like the mouth of Sauron in Return of the King. And so I think he was the only one, since he did all the talking, who really needed, you know, any kind of development. I felt he was probably the most developed. But overall, they were kind of throwaway villains, with the exception of maybe Eben Maul, because he kind of was Mr. Exposition slash Herald of Thanos sort of thing. And I thought they did a good job with them for the most part. But, you know, again, I'm just would rather them spend time on Thanos than his lackeys that will ultimately be destroyed.
Yeah, let's talk about ultimately being destroyed, man, because, of course, the snap heard around the universe wiped out, in fact, half the universe, and quite a large number of the characters we've come to know and love faded away into dust. Bell, even before that moment, there's a lot of death, a lot of destruction, a lot of pretty gut-wrenching moments. Who do you think, by the end of Avengers 4, who do you think after the next movie will be alive versus being dead? Because I don't know about you, but I don't think that they would really officially kill off Black Panther after making, you know, ridiculous buckets of money with that last franchise.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to talk about. Like, that's the Black Panther's death and Spider-Man's death were the two, I think, supposed to be the more emotional ones, right? Because, you know, Black Panther's sitting there, you know, and he's saying, come on, let's get up. This isn't a good place to die. This is no place to die. And then he dies. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then Spider-Man's all like, you know, I don't feel so good. And, you know, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And they drag his death out longer than anyone else's because they want to pull in that emotional impact, which, you know, for the most part, I'm sure worked. But for me, being, you know, a guy who looks at freaking movie slates for the next 40 years out, and, you know, and from box office, you know, movies making box office history, you know, those characters aren't dead. And so it kind of lessens that emotional impact a little bit. It was still a powerful moment and it was still really great. But, you know, you can't just tell your brain to stop thinking about that in the back of your head. And so my guess is that pretty much the only people that were the only Avengers that were left alive looked to be the original Avengers. And I feel like that's going to be flipped. It's the original Avengers are going to, like, team up to figure out how to fix it. And as a result, they're either going to sacrifice themselves or, you know, put themselves out of commission one way or the other, so that this new generation is going to step in and take the mantle, so to speak.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think when it comes down to it, like, you know, killing Black Panther was the biggest tip of the hat. Like, I could actually buy Peter actually dying here for a number of reasons, one of which is that the Sony situation is so nebulous as it is today that perhaps it actually makes more sense for Marvel to kill off Peter so that they can go on to a Miles Morales where they have more creative control and the ability to flesh out his experience more than they can with Peter at the moment. Also, they could theoretically make this movie a sequel to Peter's next film, especially since, you know, his movies are going to be 1 year after another, regardless of the timeline of everything else as he goes through high school. So, yeah, I could see them actually killing Peter in this instance and this iteration of him. It would be tragic, and I think that's why it would work so well. But Black Panther was really the tip of the hat that was like, okay, these guys are fine. Like, they're coming back. The question isn't necessarily whether or not they're coming back. It really is a question of how. Now, there is a strong theory out there that most of these, if not all of the life across the universe, was actually put into the Soul Stone itself. I would even look at the scene at the end where, right after the snap, before people started failing away, we have Thanos meeting Gamora in this orange, vast ocean of a universe that's just empty except for her. Theoretically, that is the universe within the Soul Stone. And when he steps out of that, when he returns back to reality, that everyone else starts kind of entering into that vastness, that kind of purgatory place. And there might need to be a trade. And perhaps that's where our original Avengers step up to make the trade. One thing that kind of struck me is that we don't necessarily know the fate of Shuri. And let's say this is, I'm just going to make this prediction. If Shuri becomes the new Black Panther in the next Avengers movie, we saw from, you know, the last Black Panther that when taking on the mantle and drinking the heart-shaped herb, you get to visit the ancestral plane and speak to the spirits of those that have passed on, specifically Black Panthers that have passed on. Well, if we open up on Shuri taking the herb as the new queen of Wakanda and going and seeing her father, but not seeing T'Challa anywhere, she could wake up and realize, oh, hey, they're not dead. They're somewhere else. And she could actually be the one that kind of rallies the Avengers to kind of find out, like, hey, you know, what we think happened didn't, like, there's something more at play than we fully realize yet.
That's interesting. Yeah, you know, it's that could be a really neat way for them to do that, because, yeah, my guess is like what you're saying, is that everybody is in the Soul Stone dimension. And that's how they're going to figure out a way to bring it back. And like, since the Soul Stone, you got to trade stuff to get people back. Obviously, the Avengers are going to trade themselves or something like that, be stuck in the Soul Stone. But yeah, that would be really neat to see if she does drink the heart-shaped herb, go and, like, you know, where's T'Challa? And they're like, what do you mean? He's like, because he was removed from existence. So, like, another thing that I'm going to wonder too is do these people know after this event happens? Is it like they're all just wiped from existence as if they never existed, period? Or is it just from that moment on, they're gone?
Yeah, I would imagine that they, like I said, I think they'll probably be in this kind of purgatory like state. You know, a lot of people are making the prediction that perhaps time travel will come into play. I don't see that. I don't see that. But what about you?
No. Like, what I'm saying is like, do the 50% of the universe that's left remember the people that died? Or are they completely removed from existence as if they never existed? And to the people that survived. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think that they're going to feel those deaths and they're going to know about them. Okay. I mean, like, that's, look, the last scene of the film, the next to last scene of the film, where the remaining Avengers are all in the woods and they kind of group up and, you know, you've got Rocket sitting in the background. By the way, I'm sure by this point you've heard that the I am Groot, that Groot says to Rocket at the very end, was translated as dad. He was calling Rocket his father. It was just this heartbreaking moment. But, you know, they're all there, and Rhodey's kind of walking up like, what's going on? What happened? And everybody's silent, and he kind of looks around, and then it hits him, and he hangs his head. And Steve is in the forefront, and he's just breathing hard and kind of looking up, and, like, it's just hitting him almost all at once. Like, it's just building, 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 and then he just says, oh, God. Like, he realizes that this isn't just these individuals, but that it's the entire universe. It's the entire world. It's the entire universe. They're on a planetary universal scale. They didn't just fail. They failed in the most colossal way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I think that weight is going to be there. You know, we even saw, of course, after the cookie with Samuel Jackson, with Maria Hill and Nick Fury in the car, and seeing, you know, cars crashed all around them. And in fact, they themselves actually fade out before he pages 90s style Captain Marvel. I'm going to guess that she's going to show up on the scene next movie to get Tony back to Earth. Like, a lot of people are thinking, like, oh, Captain Marvel's going to save the day. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think someone who's not an Avenger is going to be the one that saves the day in an Avengers film. But I do think that she is going to be responsible for getting Tony back to Earth. Because we know that Tony means something. Otherwise...
Yeah, Tony's important.
Like, that was the whole thing with Doctor Strange, right? Like, he didn't give it up because, one, we don't trade lives. That was everybody else's excuse. But he gave it up because this was the only way. He says that. He says, this is the only way, in reference to the only potential timeline where they could theoretically win.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because all 14 million of them failed, except for the one where he gives them the Infinity Stone.
Right. So, yeah, man.
Or I'm hoping that's the one, because I'm hoping it's not one of those situations where it's like, you know, there's 14 million that we all lost, and about 7 million of those I give the Time Stone. And then, like, you know, 3.5 million of those, something else has to happen. And then, like, you know, it whittles it down. I'm hoping that it's like, you know, there's not too much in the air, because if so, Dr. Strange should have laid the plan out for how they won to Tony before he puffed.
All right. So, overall, man, this was for me, this feels like a massive achievement, a massive, like, triumphant moment for Marvel in the last 10 years. I went on Facebook as soon as seeing it and said, you know, the criticism that I've seen some lay at the feet of this movie, that, you know, it's too much, it's not for everybody, I don't see that as criticism. I see that as accomplishing exactly what this movie should be. This is a gift to the fans, to those of us who've been showing up for every single movie, for those of us who listen to the podcast and read the blog posts and keep up with what's going on and know the ins and the outs behind the universe and everything else. This is like, goes well beyond a love note. This is like a symphony that we all get to share a piece of, because we were all part of making, in the way that we, you know, voted with our money, the way that we got behind these films, and the way that we've been able to send criticism, you know, when they've dropped the ball, like in the form of the Mandarin, and praises where they have gone above and beyond, like what they've done with Black Panther and with several others. And so, yeah, this movie was for us, and I love it. And they did a great job. And this is this generation's Empire Strike Back. And I think that's a fair thing to say. And yeah, for me, 5 out of 5. What about you, man?
Yeah, 5 out of 5. I completely agree with everything you're saying there. Like, it's definitely, it's kind of disappointing that, like, if you hadn't seen 10 years worth of movies, that this movie might not, you know, work for you, or you might not enjoy it, which is kind of a shame, just because I'm of the mind, you know, you should try to make movies accessible to everybody, you know, and not necessarily accessible to everybody, but, like, I don't want to have to go and read a bunch of, like they did with Cloverfield and stuff, where it's like, oh yeah, you know, you go read all this stuff and then that explains the plot, as opposed to just explaining things in the movie, you know, like those kind of things. So that's kind of sad, but, like, I completely understand it. And yeah, this is what they've been working for the last 10 years. And honestly, it's not for, you know, everybody. It's for the people who stuck in there and like you said, voted with their money and did all that kind of stuff. This is a love letter to, and who this movie is for. And so, yeah, you know, because of that, I think they couldn't have done a better job with this movie. They just took all those storylines and all those threads and all these, you know, 10 years of movies and just brought them together. And honestly, I cannot wait for the next Avengers movie. Like, I hadn't been this excited to see, you know, the next Avengers film in quite some time. Probably since the first Avengers film, when I was like, holy crap, I want to see what they do in the next Avengers film. Then Age of Ultron came out and I was like, and now we have Infinity War and I'm like, I want to see the next Avengers film.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because, you know, there's some parallels that I've seen people online drawing between The Last Jedi and this movie, and how, you know, both of them kind of ended on a dour note with, you know, the stakes being very poor for the bad, or for the good guys, right? Because the bad guys seemingly win. And it's really interesting, though, because the difference here is that, like, you know, the issues that I had with The Last Jedi kind of made it to where it's like, you know, episode 9, whatever, or episode 9, you know, yeah, it's gonna come out, I guess I'll go see it, but, like, I'm not too terribly excited. But for Infinity War 4 or Avengers 4, I'm 4,
yeah.
Stoked. I'm stoked for it, man. I cannot.
I'm all in. What do you want to make a prediction as to what the title is going to be? Because they've yet to announce it.
Avengers Assemble.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be it. I'm hoping that's it. I'm hoping that we get a moment in the film where Cap finally says the iconic line. I'd love to see in that in that, you know, kind of big final moment for a lot of those, what we assume will be a final moment for a lot of those characters, are returned to some of the more classic approaches to their uniforms. Him saying Avengers Assemble with the heroic shot of all of these characters, those that died this movie and those that may die next movie, all coming together for one final charge. We didn't really get that hero moment. Like the hero moment in this film was actually Groot, Rocket, and Thor showing up. There was a hero moment for Cap when he was in the shadows for sure, and kind of his return. But I think that the biggest, like, you know, they even played the swelling Avengers music when Thor returns to Earth. But we still need that big one of all of them charging, assembled together to go off and save the day. I cannot wait for that moment to happen. I do hope that happens next movie, man. And when it does, we will be here to geek out with you, because I don't know about you, Bell, but I survived the snap. Have you checked to see if you survived?
No, I did not.
You didn't?
Nope, oh, Bell, I did not.
Are you feeling okay?
I don't feel so, Bell.
Well, one way or the other, well, hopefully somebody out there will sacrifice themselves to get Bell back. But one way or the other, we will definitely be back. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, for those of you who discovered this particular episode on the Flash TV talk feed, that's because we've been having some issues with the panel to screen feed after a violent hack virus that impacted that particular show. And so it's funny, Bell. Half of the Podasteri shows just kind of all of a sudden virally disappeared. I thought about that the other day.
Thanos virus?
it must have been. Somebody snapped somewhere. But anyway, so we wanted to make sure that we got this out as soon as possible to folks. So that's why we're putting it out on Flash TV Talk. For those of you who normally listen to Flash TV Talk, hopefully you enjoyed this, even though this has nothing to do with DC or The Flash. And for those of you who are panel to screen purist, but you've never listened to Flash TV Talk, stick around on this feed. Check out some other episodes, and we'd love to have you as a listener here as well. But until then, that's going to do it for us. So for me, for Bell, for Bell's mom,
hi, Mom.
I'm not feeling so well.
This is awesome.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.